Welcome to Existence, Moments in Time. I'm Andrew Hiller. In fiction, heroes come in all shapes and sizes, from the very young to the aged, from ghosts to aliens, and from every race, creed, religion, or gender. But on the silver screen, there's been one type of hero that's been in short supply, the black hero. Joining us to talk about heroes, role models, TV, and his existence is actor Cress Williams, star of the new CW series, Black Lightning. Welcome, Cress.
Hey, thanks for having me.
First off, congratulations on the success of your new series. Were you surprised at how Black Lightning has been received?
You know what? Well, first of all, thank you very much. Thanks for having me. And, you know, and I don't necessarily mean this from an ego standpoint, but I'm not surprised at all. When I read the script and saw what kind of show it was going to be, I mean, it's something that if I had to remove myself from it, that I would admit that I would be watching on a regular basis. So because of that, I felt like it was a successful equation that was just ours to mess up, essentially.
So does that mean that when you received it, you really looked at it as just a good piece of writing and the social commentary and the cultural aspects were secondary?
Well, yeah, it kind of happened in stages. You know, when I first heard that it was happening, I was just attracted to the fact of the superhero aspect. I'm a nerd and I love superhero things, something I've always wanted to do. And then I read the script and realized this was going to be a show that was much more textured and nuanced than that. The social commentary aspect, the family aspect, all of these things were taking this superhero genre and elevating it to another level. All that did was increase my excitement for wanting to do the show.
And, of course, your show is not the only show that's come out. Black Panther is also another one. Do you think that Black Panther and Black Lightning have been more than just critical successes, but seem to have been very strongly embraced? Why do you think 2018 has suddenly become the year of the black superhero?
It's kind of a convergence of things. I mean, I think it eliminated the need for more diversity. It eliminated that as a human beings were not as formed as we thought we were. And so I think that increased a hunger for more stories and more diverse stories. And then, you know, I think anytime, regardless of race or anytime something is quality, if the quality's there, people will watch. I believe that. I know as a viewer and a fan of television and film myself that if the quality's there, I watch. If the quality's not there, you know, it doesn't really matter who's on screen. I'm just not going to watch. So I think it's kind of this perfect storm of circumstances, and also both with Black Panther and I think with Black Lightning, you know, we're putting out quality products.
I think you're right. I think there's also another aspect, which you touched on, which is that events push art. I know that in the 1950s and into the 60s, the best comics, the best stand-ups, the best writers were all Jews. And part of that was because they'd all just come out of the Holocaust and World War II. And what we're seeing now in the teens, in the 21st century, is a black experience which is beginning to need voice again.
Man, that's beautiful. It's interesting. I mean, I consider myself a student of stand-up comedy, and I didn't even think about that. Yeah, and I think the thing is that, you know, any time there are an oppressed group of people, their story has more layers to it, has more to chew on as an artist, but also as a viewer, than the non-oppressed. We watch and we lean into for entertainment, whether it's stand-up comedy, whether it's comics, whether it's, you know, film or television, conflict, those wrinkles are what draw us in. And so it's inherent that a minority group or an oppressed group, they're going to have more conflict, more wrinkles, and it's a lot more interesting to watch.
Now, it's interesting that you say that you're a student of stand-up comedy, and in fact, one of your first major gigs was on Living Single, because when I look at Black Lightning, possibly the only thing missing from the series so far is the laughs. Is there room for funny on Black Lightning?
I think there is, you know, and we've had a couple of moments. I think there was an episode where one of the major storylines was Jennifer announcing to her parents that she's ready to have sex, and that episode had a lot of humorous moments. I mean, just the exchange between the character Lynn and I, the dinner conversation about it. Then there was the scene where Jefferson talks to Jennifer's boyfriend. I found those extremely funny, and they were also really refreshing. Like, I was really, as the actor, really happy that we were going to add some of those comical elements. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's room for it. You know, I'm glad. I think we've walked that line in a good way where there's some comical moments, but we're not getting slapsticky or getting moving over into anything silly.
You know, that speaks to one of the things I like best about Black Lightning, which is that even though it works really well as a superhero adventure series, I think it's even better as a drama or a melodrama. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder, is the life of the father, the principal, the community member, in some ways more important than the life of the vigilante in Black Lightning?
You know, it's interesting. I think so. I mean, you know, like I said, I set out to do this project because I was attracted to Black Lightning more than Jefferson Pierce. But as I see the story that we're telling, I got to admit, as an actor, I'm drawn to the scenes more as Jefferson Pierce than as Black Lightning. I'm always trying to find truth. I'm not an educator. I have taught before, but I am a father, a husband, and so those human aspects are really the things that excite me the most, the things that I enjoy playing. And I've had, you know, a number of friends who really enjoy the show as a family drama, and, you know, the superhero things are just kind of like icing on the cake.
And talking about the superhero thing, a couple of years ago I got a chance to speak with Burt Ward and Adam West of the old 1960s Batman series. And Burt said he was always getting beat up. He admitted that at least once he broke a leg trying to jump into the Batmobile. So I'm going to ask, how are you doing?
I hope I don't break any bones, but I have my wounds from doing the show and playing in the suit and just the physical nature of it. I mean, I think any time you are playing a physical character like this and you do it enough, it's just a matter of time that, you know, you're going to get something, whether it's just little aches and pains. In the show, I've had a couple moments hitting the heavy bag to, like, let out my frustrations. And I hit a heavy bag normally, so it's not like something I'm not used to, but I've let my emotions get the best of me, and before I know it, you know, the next day I'm like, wait, why is my wrist so sore? Oh, I think I did that a little too hard. Plus the suit itself and doing all the things in the suit, it's inevitable that you're going to, you know, walk away with some battle scars.
Now, are you in better shape now because of Black Lightning, just the course of what you need to do in the blocking, or because you need to be in good shape to be a superhero?
I really set out to get into much better shape probably about 8 years ago, and really found exercise and all that to be a way of life, and exercise and eating to become a way of life. So it was kind of fortunate. I was fortunate that then I've been living this way for a while, and then comes, you know, Black Lightning, and so it wasn't a shock to my system to live this way. So it just kind of amped it up. So I think it's a little bit of both. I was already on that path, and then once the show came about, then it forced me to go, okay, this is now not just a passion of mine, it's now my job also.
So I want to segue to you, to a little bit of you in the community, and talk about the idea of role models. And going back, everyone has talked about why Black Panther is so important, because it creates this Afrocentric universe and such a positive role model. But in some ways, I think Black Lightning is more important because it's episodic, and we get continual experiences with the black superhero every week. And I want to ask, how do you deal with the responsibility of being a role model as an actor? And how do you think the writers deal with that responsibility?
From the writer's standpoint, first, I mean, they start with the vision. And you know, Salim's vision has always been really conveying the truth and all of its beauty and ugliness. And so I think that his responsibility, it continues to remain, making sure that he's always being truthful in the story that we're telling. And, you know, for me, it's like that's, I love the fact that we're an episodic, because it's, you know, there's something more intimate about being in an audience member's living room. When you go see a movie, you go away to go see it and have this isolated experience. But, you know, at a television show, we're in people's living rooms every single week, and there's a intimacy with that, and there's also the ability, because we're on this journey every single week and for presumably for years, we get to show every aspect, the ugliness, the beauty of it, you know, all of it. And so I think that we have the ability to go deeper and to not just kind of address one issue or one question, but over the course of seasons to address many issues and questions and show, I guess, how to be a more well-rounded role model. You know, again, I'm a father and a husband and a member of a community. And so, you know, I want my work to always, not to say that it always has to be wholesome, but that in the grand scheme of things, that my work is contributing positively to the world as opposed to negatively. And sometimes that positivity can be simply by illuminating something. Sometimes it can be about inspiring, and sometimes it's just about education. Either way, I want to be able to look at it and say that I've contributed, you know, to the light as opposed to the dark.
Although that could lead to a different kind of problem, because episodic TV generally takes long, long hours. And if you're a father, that also takes long hours. Have you managed to figure out the balance?
I'm getting better at it, I should say. Not pretty good at it. We're getting better at it. And it starts with my wife is my partner. And, you know, even undertaking this job, it was a family decision. It wasn't my decision alone to take this job for us to move. But I think the underlying thing is I always tell myself and remind myself that family is first. And, you know, fortunately, we have a really great set that is a family-oriented set. My kids can come, my wife can come and be a part. And there's little things that you can do. Rather than having an actual gym that I go to work out or a personal trainer that I go to, I have a home gym. And it's because I know I'm going to spend lots of hours there. And so I'm in the house doing that as opposed to being away. So I'm still like a part of the family. And anytime I'm not working, I'm the one doing the laundry and the dishes and being a part. So it requires a balance, but I mean, it just requires an intentionality. And, you know, after finishing season one, this is a time to take those lessons and to figure out the balance even better for season two and so on.
You're doing laundry and you're doing dishes. Does that mean superheroes, kryptonite is really the honey-do list?
No, I mean, it's a weird thing. I don't know, like, certain things, like, actually, they not necessarily calm me, but they're like, things like laundry and dishes, like, these are things that I feel like I have to do in order to feel normal. There are these little mini bits of accomplishment, and I don't want to feel separate from my family or, like, this being who just kind of goes and brings home the bacon and is not a part. So I love being normal. And, they're probably just as helpful for my family as they are for me.
And a little while ago you were talking about homework, but homework in terms of your kids. I want to talk a little bit about your homework, the homework of your craft and the discipline. Are you the kind of actor who is more about improvisation, or do you like to research everything and do backstory? How do you approach a role?
You know what? Fortunately, I've been trained in multiple schools of thought. My acting teachers and my acting mentors, more than anything, kind of gave me access to all the ways of acting and were really about an actor collecting a bag. Some might say a bag of tricks, but just a bag of stuff, because you never know what's going to work on any given day. I believe in preparation. I prepare, and I'm always I generally get into a rhythm where I memorize my scenes for the next day, the night before, and even slowly go through and make decisions on how I want to do things. But then I also like to keep myself open to new things in the moment. But I believe in that preparation, because that preparation kind of helps when things start going wrong. But if you're open for new things, sometimes some really happy accidents happen as well. So it's a little bit of both.
Can you describe one of those happy accidents? Because those are as a painter, those are one of my favorite things.
Yeah, you know, sometimes it's a happy accident of something falling, and you just happen to react to it. Oftentimes, I think a lot of the happy accidents is just in the moment, you don't know what the other actor is going to give you. And so, you know, you deliver a line one way, but if I deliver that line and they come at me and say it in a completely different manner, if I'm listening properly, then it can almost change the trajectory of the scene. I'm thankful that we have a work environment that is this way, that sometimes, you know, lines just need to be tweaked a little bit or modified a little bit, and we have a set that we're free to do that and to kind of really find it. And so I think if you're too rigid, you're not open to those things. But at the same time, if you haven't done your work, you don't really have a foundation to work from.
You know, I've never been an actor, but at one point I was a playwright, not a hugely. I made it up to Equity Showcases in New York.
And oh, wow.
I remember my very first time one of my plays was produced, being the eager young fool, I had to be in the audience every single show for the 4-week run it had. And what was interesting was, and I found it delightful actually, every show was a little bit different. The actors
right.
would say the lines slightly different. Sometimes they would amend the lines differently. And one thing I've always liked is sometimes the actors find a nuance in your script, in your writing, which makes it much richer, much more brilliant than you intended. You know, they'll find something of real worth in one of your throwaway lines. Have you found that to be the case?
I do, and I'm really thankful. You know, I started, you know, I went the college route and studied theater and got my degree in theater, and then kind of moved into film and television. And I'm really thankful because going back to the theater days, when you're dealing with published pieces of work, you know, Sam Shepard or David Mamet, or you know, you're or Shakespeare for that matter, as an actor, you're not allowed to change that. You have to learn how to work within that. You're not allowed to change a line, a punctuation, or anything. You have to make that work. And then, you know, but it took me a while to then adjust into film and television and realize film and television is a different animal where in that world, oftentimes you are allowed to change it, to mine it, because the scripts, they haven't been worked and workshopped and lived with long enough. They haven't been vetted long enough to be deemed the Bible and don't change this. So, you know, they're written on a much faster pace. So I've had to learn that balance of like I can change things, but I think as an artist, our job is not to change things just to suit us. Our job is to always find the truth and mine for the character and mine and find the truth of the scene. And if that means a line should be shifted or changed, that's different. So.
And so I'm going to look at things that you might change. As the host of The Prism, which was a science, health, and tech radio magazine that was on for about 4 years, one day I would be interviewing a physicist at CERN talking about Higgs boson. The next day I'd be talking with a neurologist. The next day a dental surgeon. The next day an AI guy. And I wound up being flooded with technicalese in Latin. And sometimes I would adjust my scripts to find a way to say what I need to say, get rid of a few of those 8-syllable words.
I think the challenging things for actors is dealing with exposition, you know, and it's just kind of inevitable in television. You have, you know, these scenes where you have to explain to the audience a lot of information in a very short period of time. And so that's hard. It's hard to finesse that. And like, fortunately, on our show, they allow us to, you know, sometimes it's about simplifying. But sometimes it's also about just adding some transitional words in there to fill it in so it doesn't feel like exposition. It actually feels like conversation. And oftentimes what I just try to do is almost play audience member. And as I'm looking at the scene and looking at the dialogue, just thinking, does this make sense to me? Like, can I follow it? And if it starts to feel a little too, I don't know, heady, then I start simplifying it in a way like, okay, if I can get this so that I understand this and I can follow this, then I can convey that. And then the other thing that the writers have let me change a lot is that, you know, that Jefferson Pierce and Black Lightning have two very distinct different voices. And so, you know, Black Lightning put on this persona that, A, it's to help people distance him from Jefferson so that they would think, so that people wouldn't suspect that, you know, that Jefferson would ever be Black Lightning, is that he's a lot more urban. And so a lot of times I'll look at the scenes, and the writers usually kind of urbanize it up a little bit, but then there'll be words and phrases that just sound a little too much like Jefferson that I will then just kind of urbanify up a bit more. So,
and probably the final question, and thank you for indulging me so far.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
As the star of Black Lightning, you get to do more than just trod the boards. You get invited to events like Comic-Cons, and as Washington, D.C.'s AwesomeCon is one you're coming up to. With that, you get the opportunity to tell your story or interact with fans, but you don't get the benefit of screenwriters. How much do you prepare for that, and is this something that excites you, or does it incite butterflies?
This is going to be my first one. I mean, so it'll be interesting. It's my opportunity to be myself. You know, I'm not playing Jefferson. I'm not playing Black Lightning. I'm just playing me. And so it's like, well, I know me. If I just go be me, then I won't require any writing at all. It incites both excitement and butterflies. The excitement is just, you know, I'm used to doing theater, and theater, you get the gratification of knowing exactly how the audience feels about your work in the moment and then after the moment. But with film and television, it's this distance. Well, these conventions are this unique experience where I will get a chance to interact and find out exactly what the audience feels about my work. And so I'm excited about that. And then, you know, the butterflies come in because I'm, oddly enough, an introverted person, and so I'm actually more comfortable in life. I'm most comfortable when I have to deal with large amounts of people. It's easy when I have a character to play, because, like, I'm being judged on the character. I'm not being judged on me. I have a template of something to follow. I just have to be truthful in playing this character. But, like, out in the world, in these big events, I'm me, and it's kind of like operating a little bit without a net. So there's always butterflies.
Okay, so you bumped into something. I'll share one more story, ask one more question if I can.
Yeah.
So back in my NPR days, I was once assigned a fairly fluffy story. It was about the National Kite Festival being held at the Smithsonian Museums Institutes. And I went down and I interviewed the docents, and I interviewed a whole bunch of international and national kite champions and builders. And I decided to introduce the piece in a me sort of way. I said, you know, how come when people tell you, you got to slow down and smell the roses, it's a good thing. But when someone tells you to go fly a kite, and I led the trail off. And so that was the intro to this story. And then I decided to go down to the mall, to the Washington Mall, and see the festival, just to see if it lived up to what they were going to describe it as from my preview piece. And I found about 8 or 9 pockets of people who made that sort of same go fly a kite analogy. And I was like, it has resonance. People listen. And I wonder about that, because you were talking about, you know, the difference between being a theater actor and being a television actor and not getting that immediate audience feedback. How do you know it's good?
And I kind of learned this a lot of years ago, and actually it wasn't until Black Lightning that I, like, when I first started out as a television actor, you know, I would watch everything I did, often a couple of times. You know, I'd watch it with people, and then I'd watch it by myself, and I'd critique and break down every single thing. I mean, oftentimes I was just found myself not happy about the whole experience. And then a lot of years later, I kind of realized that when I'm on stage doing a play, before the audience applauds or anything, I'm aware, I have an opinion on whether it was a good night or a bad night. That's really not even about the audience's response to it. That I, you know, as an actor, you know, like, oh, I felt like I really nailed that moment. This moment was a little foggy. Wow, this moment was better than it's ever been. You just know when it's like, yeah, I was really connected, and that was a really great show. And you know when it's like, that show wasn't so great, and it has nothing to do with the audience. And so I kind of decided at that point that for a lot of years, I didn't watch my performances. I just kind of thought, like, no, when I go do it, when I'm on set and I'm doing it, that's for me. And then the watching of it is for the audience. I watch Black Lightning now every week because, as I said, this is a show that I'm a fan of, and if I wasn't in it, I'd still be watching it. But I think I just, at least I suspect that it's good, or at least I know that I've done my best job based on just the work on the day. Now, I have to take it with a grain of salt because theater is more for actors, whereas film and television is more for editors. And so they will oftentimes, you know, take takes that and or edit things in a way that I didn't expect. And so I have to kind of be able to let that go.
Hoping the Black Lightning strikes at least twice, I'm Andrew Hiller for Existence Moments in Time, speaking with actor Cress Williams. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Existence Moments in Time. If you'd like to hear this episode again or check out others you might have missed, please go to our website, existence.com. If you'd like to generate your own existence story, please feel free to contact us or write and upload your own page. Thanks again for listening to Existence Moments in Time. I'm Andrew Hiller.